stuff out. If you want to retire sooner than later, you got to know your destination. You got to know your financial address. I talk about it in chapter one of my book, What's My Financial Address? Let's talk about your GPS. How many guys was invited here this morning, and what did you ask for, or what did you receive to get here? The address, and you plugged it in where? Google Maps. In other words, you knew your destination from your home, and you knew exactly how to get here. Did they give you one option or three different options? Three different options. One option is what? Take a local route, the toll road, or the normal public highway, right? So which gets you to your destination the fastest? The toll road. In other words, if you're willing to pay the price, you can get to where you want to go, from where you started to where you want to go, faster. In life, if you're willing to pay the price, you can get to where you want to go faster.
What's crack-a-lackin', everybody? Money Smart Guy Matt Cipolla here. Hailing to you from Dallas, Texas. Joining me in studio today is my co-host, Milton Alvarez. What's crack-a-lackin', buddy? How you doing?
Happy Wednesday, baby.
Happy Wednesday. We have a show for you today. Financial Literacy Month, April. That's where we're at today. We got some shocking stats here about the current state of financial literacy in America. One of the crazy ones I just saw here in this report here is that a lot of people aren't financially literate. Only seven states in the entire United States require some form of financial literacy class before graduating. And more people today are losing money annually. Approximately $2,400 a year annually is lost because people are financially literate. And that's on the low end. We've got people here talking about marriage. What's the cost of marriage? What's the cost of divorce? Well, we're going to break down what the cost of divorce is if you pick the wrong life partner. We're going to do an overlay here of somebody who's reacting to a woman who's got six kids and she's single and she's dating, and what this guy's reaction. I mean, attractive woman. She looks very well put together. But as soon as she told this dude, "I got six kids," you're going to want to know this guy's reaction. We're going to be covering that video here on the show today. The impact of fatherless homes in a society today. What does it really mean? Single parent homes. I was a single dad raising my kids for 12, 14 years before I met my now wife, Sheena. What's the real impact, though, of fatherless homes in society? And you got some topics here on your end on the health and wellness side.
Health and wellness, and actually, since we are in Financial Literacy Month, there's two questions that I want to be able to bring forth to the table when it comes down to asking you a question. There's a video that there's a man reacting to whenever you have someone in your family who's passing down property, passing down anything that's of value, how to avoid paying taxes. Yep. And he speaks about putting it in a trust. But a lot of people nowadays, because only a few amount of states actually know, you know, do the financial aspects of, you know, the schooling, they don't know what a trust is. So asking you the question, what a trust is and how to approach it.
For sure.
And now when it comes down to the fatherhood aspect, you know, having a father in the household and knowing how to raise your kids in a certain in a certain route, on a certain path, teaching them the things they need to learn as a father who's successful versus a father who's absent or a father who also has identity issues. Mm-hmm. So I want to be able to tap into that, you being in the position that you're in today and how to approach fatherhood in the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to unpack that in that show here today. There's so many stats here. I got some graphs I want to share with you about financial literacy, where it stands in relation to everything. I mean, we got so many things going against us from an economic standpoint. I'm glad you guys are tuning in, because this show, the Seven Figure Squad podcast, is going to teach you and show you and guide you in ways of looking at money, the perspective of money from a faith-based perspective, from an entrepreneur-based perspective, help you understand how to win the money game. All right. So, all right, let's unpack this real quick. So, let's talk about the business of being in business. Mm. You know, oftentimes, people think, you're a personal trainer. I was an insurance agent. I am an insurance agent. But how do you scale it from a one-man operation to a five-man operation, a 10-man operation, so you can create passive income? You can create royalties. You can create other dividend income. How can you create those things if you are finally in a disposition of saying, I want to control my income once and for all? This very famous actor here, you guys are going to recognize his face when we show it. If you want to be in the business of, in this case, an actor, you have to divorce yourself from just being solely an actor. Let's take a look at this clip.
If you really want to be in our business,
Seinfeld,
the business of being an actor, the days of thinking only as an actor are probably over. The most frustrated actors I know are the ones that are waiting for someone to give them the gig. You must make the gig.
Hmm.
You must get the writers. You must get the directors, you must get the designers, you must get, if you're going to do it on film, you must get the cinematographers and everybody that makes filmed storytelling happen. If you're doing it on stage, you need those kinds of designers. You build your companies, you build your support systems, and you go out and make stuff. You hire yourself. And if what you're doing is good, you will A, make a living, you will B, be very happy, and C, somebody may just see it and give you an opportunity you couldn't create for yourself.
Damn.
But to sit there and wait for someone to give you the chance happens every day, and there's success stories every day. But the likelihood is you're going to watch the calendar pages turn waiting for that opportunity because you didn't make it yourself.
Cool. So here's a point. You can wait for things to happen, or you can go out and make things happen for you. But Jordan, can you show my screen here real quick? This is the famous Joris Costanza picture. I want to get it on your wall. It was be my gift for you for this podcast. But this is him. I mean, this is him creating opportunities.
Yeah.
I mean, who would ever think a guy like this would take a pose like this? But yeah. This is him being in the business of being an actor. And how many guys are watching this show right now? How many of you guys are watching this podcast? Like, I want to be financially free. I want to be financially independent. I'm a good landscaper. I'm an engineer. I'm a personal trainer. I'm a realtor. Well, how do I get from a one-man operation to a 5, 10, 15-man operation? And so I know you deal with a lot of business clients. I got four thoughts here. I'm gonna gather them for you. But since you deal with a lot of business clients, and without naming any names, but what has stuck out to you with them going from a one-man operation? And you and I have flipping conversations with each other in terms of business.
Yeah.
And how many are actually treating their business like a business versus them just reacting to what happens the next day?
So there's a book that I've read twice. And every time I read it, I think you and I spoke about this yesterday when we were having lunch. You can read something. You can read a certain material. And then go back to maybe a year later, a couple years later, and you read it again, but it's a different interpretation.
Yep.
And E-Myth, I'm sure you've read that book.
E-Myth, yeah, Michael Gerber.
Right?
Love that book.
The entrepreneur, yep. The technician, and
the manager.
And the manager.
Yep.
The people who are utilizing all three and mm-hmm. know how to play their roles with all three, those are the people, from what I've seen, they're growing in their business. When they've finally been able to outsource themselves and actually hire people in those right. categories,
yep.
those are the people who are, as you say, exponentially yep. growing.
Yep.
But the people who are trying to take everything on, but they're too entrepreneurial or they're too technical, aka the fulfillment, or they're too of the managers, so they're not taking risks, something's going to be leaking in the business, which is not going to allow it to completely fully grow.
Yep.
And the people who are doing fantastic in the business are the ones who have found a system where they can hire people in all three departments
yep.
and give them that free-for-all so they can do their roles and they can just focus on the specific role that they play.
Absolutely. You know, when you're looking at your business or you're looking at whatever your craft is, whatever widget or service or product you're offering to the marketplace, number one, you got to have a great product.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be an actor, be a great actor. If you're going to be a trainer, be a great trainer. If you're going to be an insurance agent, realtor, lawyer, service-based professional, be the most kick-ass type of professional you can be in that craft. You know, Michael Jordan said the best. I said, listen, I got all these endorsements. I got Gatorade, I got Nike, I got Chevrolet, I got Hanes, I got all these different endorsements. But my biggest endorsement, the biggest reason why I get all these different opportunities is because what I do on the basketball court. Yeah. So if you're not, for example, if you suck as an employee,
yeah.
good luck becoming an entrepreneur. You're already showing bad behaviors, bad attitude, bad disposition. You know, oftentimes people think, you're recruiting people to entrepreneurship, you're recruiting people to a fake American dream. Is everybody going to make it in business? Is everybody going to make it as an entrepreneur? Short answer is no. But at least give it a shot to see if you got what it takes. And if you have, and the best business for you to give it a shot are businesses that you don't have to invest a lot of money into, heavy money into. You look at the two guys running this podcast. We invest less than $300-$500 to get our business license, our corporation, et cetera, what we need to be legitimate in business. And then after that, you had to sell. So here's four quick things I just want to share with you guys. Four things that require you to be an entrepreneur to scale from a one-man operation to a 10 to a 20. First one is business development sales. You got to be good selling your craft, man. You got to be good selling your widget, your product, your service. You got to create opportunities. You got to create referrals. You got to create affinity partners, relationships out there that send referrals that send your way. That's number one. Number two, you got to be good in operations and systems. So if it wasn't for me documenting our standard operating procedures, documenting what we do for Seven Figure Squad, documenting what we do for PHP, and documenting what we do for the Money Smart Movement, we'd be still a one-man operation because we're having to rethink everything. So, for example, if I'm hiring folks, mm-hmm. like I got to start from scratch all the time. Instead of saying, okay, this is what this last person, I documented what they did well, and here's how we can take this business to the next level. Mm-hmm. And we talked about here in previous episodes, in previous podcasts, where Steve Jobs went from hiring B and C players to then attracting A players. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the A players, they want, what they want to do, they want to attract other A players. And they do that without you. So that's operations and systems, which leads me to number three, innovative campaigns. So for example, you know, we're looking at Just Do It. Is that an innovative campaign?
Yeah.
Taco Bell, probably not right, but Run for the Border.
Yeah, that's fucking right.
Was that
yeah.
an innovative campaign? Yeah. All right. So these are campaigns. Coors Light, the Silver Bullet.
Yeah.
Was it Bud Light or was it Butter? What was that brand? I'm down for whatever, man. You know, the frat guy, like, I'm down for whatever.
I think it was Bud Light.
Was it Bud Light, right? Before it became Bud Light. And Bud Light's obviously rebranding itself. So these are next innovative campaigns. Black Friday is a great innovative campaign, and it's still going. So what is your innovative campaign? So therefore, this causes you to stay on top of your business versus being consumed in the business. And last but not least is leadership development. These are what I call exponential activities, because if I'm able to invest and build people, guess what happens? They make more time for me. They take headaches off my plate. They remove unnecessary problems from my plate. And now you have a self-sustaining leader running a department. For example, one of the richest employees out there is Stephen Ballmer. Straight up, he's not an entrepreneur. You know, he's worth, you know, close to $100 billion of his work and stock ownership. What he did as a CEO, COO, number 30th employee of Microsoft. And next thing he buys the LA Clippers, and he's buying all these different things because he was a great CEO. He's a great COO. So sometimes people think that, do I always got to be an actor or an entrepreneur? No, you can be a great employee, be so valuable to a company that people want to create jobs for you because you become invaluable. And so people think, like, do I need to start my own deal or start my own business? You can find a way to partner. For example, we've partnered with Patrick Bedave and PHP Agency. My wife and I have partnered with Integrity Marketing Group. Find ways to partner. We're partnering right here on this podcast to build a show together instead of independently. It's our choice, our stuff. There's a bunch of guys out there to create an independent podcast, knock themselves out. No problem. All good. Tucker Carlson, Dan Bongino, you know, Candace Owens, you know, your favorite, Don Lemon. You know, all these guys. Oh, fuck. All these guys could do independent shows with them being the personality. But shows like this, for example, Milton and I are partnering together. Instead of creating our own podcast, we're using RCN right here, RNCN for podcast studio. Find ways to partner. So these are different ways of being in business for yourself. So therefore, you can call yourself a business. You become an entrepreneur using these four key tips versus just being a wantrepreneur.
So when you're speaking right now, it takes me back to a scenario with a business owner that I knew about, and he had a couple employees, and he said something very, very that stood out to me. He was having a meeting with his employees, and he said, he started off his meeting with, "All you guys here are valuable people." I'm like, "Oh, good start," mm-hmm. "but not all of you guys are bringing value to the table."
Ooh, that's a good point.
Yeah. So when people play a certain victim role of like, "No, man, I'm valuable for who I am. You know, I find my identity in God." Cool. Got it. Awesome. But in your eyes, being in a position that you're in right now in the business that you're in, when someone says you're valuable, but you don't bring value, how does one determine the value that you can actually bring to the table of a business so they can get a raise, get bonuses, X, Y, Z?
For example, the video we just opened up with, right?
Yeah.
Is my national Gotcha Book Tour I've been on. I'm going to every city once a week, twice a week. I'm going to different cities across the country for my Gotcha Book Tours with with Insider Infrastructure, with PHP Agency, and our Des Moines Smart Movement team. And one of the areas I were recruiting a videographer to do video work, right? And I said, one of two things you can be to us. And we, by the way, we pay our bills, right? We make sure you're taken care of. Our job is a great job. And I want you to know, we pay our bills. You're going to get taken care of. You give us your proposal. You fulfill it, we pay our bills. But there's one or two ways we can treat you. We can treat you like a vendor. Like, you just do your job, and you just do just enough just to do the job. No above and beyond. No, I'm going to be invaluable. I'm going to think about you the next time around. Oh, here's some things I knew. Here's some clips I thought might be extra for you on top of the job I created for you. It's for your Instagram. here's a shot of you backstage or side stage or on stage. Man, it's a killer shot. Man, it might be good. So those are invaluable things that a videographer can do to make sure the next time I come to that city and state, I come there. So this guy, not only was he overly priced, and we paid it, completely paid our bill, but he just did just enough. And he was more expensive than any other videographer we hired in anywhere else, because I thought, hey, we'll just pay a premium because this guy comes from a premium type of background, education, sure, experience. But he's just like any 18, 19, 20, 21, picking up a camera.
Trying to get a shot.
Trying to get a shot.
Yeah.
Bro, we're not coming back to you because you're just a vendor versus a second way is a partner where you're looking for ways for us to grow above and beyond.
Yeah.
I like the above and beyond. That's how you earn a tip and that's how you become referable.
Yeah. So, okay. So, for example, a lot of guys who could be 18, 19 years old or young, yes, and they're trying to find their way, they're trying to make a dollar. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest complaints, because I've tried hiring a couple people and they're like, bro, like, I need to get paid like an actual livable wage. Like, mm-hmm, I want to work with you. I see the vision for your brand. I see what you have to offer and I see where this is going in the next couple of years, what you're trying to do for your business.
Yeah.
But I can't survive off of what you're trying to pay me. How do you measure how much to pay someone who's barely coming on board with you?
So, you know, you can assess what the market is paying, right? And say, listen, with the market plans that pop, 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 this is what the market demands. Here's what my budget as a startup company can pay you. Now, if you meet our deliverables and you meet our deadlines, I never have to ask you for anything. I don't have to ever worry about where you're at. Yeah. If you properly steward and you show up and you're dependable and you're prompt and you're fast and you're quick. I said, I judge people on a few criteria. Number one is skill set. Do you have the skill set necessary to do the job? It's that's your power spot. That's correct. Not my power spot.
Correct.
My power spot is being a trainer. My power spot is being an insurance agent. Your power spot is being a video guy.
Yeah.
Do you have the skills to pay the bills? Number one, right? Number two, are you fast?
Yeah.
Do you have speed? Can you do this quickly? Or, for example, there's another area, right? Another videographer we hired. He asked for everything to be paid all up front. So I'm just working with you. I was like, okay, here's my problem with negotiation. I learned from my mistake. I paid this guy all up front. Well, I paid him half down and booked the time. And we got done shooting. I haven't got my deliverable yet, though. He says, Matt, listen, I'm broke. I'm behind stuff. Can you just pay me right now? And I'll do the job next few days. I felt sorry for him. I wanted to create the job. I did it. Do you think he acted with any more speed?
Of course not.
Of course not. You know why? Because he already got paid.
Yeah.
There's no incentive for him to be quick and prompt because I already paid him.
Yeah.
Right? So I learned, so people learn from my mistake. I'm learning about negotiation and dealing with vendors and people too as well as I'm going along the way. And the third thing too as well is it's a weird word. It's called citizenship. Or referability. Do you care enough about your position? You care enough about what I'm doing? If I'm looking out for you because I'm creating a job for you, are you also looking out for me too as well? Is there some way that we're both creating synergy to create opportunities for each other? Because one location, I went back and as soon as the shoot was done, he sent me 10 pictures right away. Hey man, post this on Instagram. These are hot shots, man.
Was it San Antonio?
No. He's at the bottom of the list.
Oh wow.
San Antonio's at the bottom of the list. Okay. Wow. Without naming names.
Yeah.
All right. And this guy in another city and state that I didn't expect for him to step up and step through, he surprised me the most. And he and I came back to that city and state and said, bro, I'm using it the second time. And on top of that, I'm edifying you in front of everybody to do business with here inside the business community doing business for them to look for you to do these type of services because you do right by me. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure I do right by you. So if you take care of me and I make money, and guess what I want to do? I want you to make money.
Yeah, of course.
That's how entrepreneurship and business should look. But guys are so much into short term and short sighted. And I'd rather partner with a guy that's going places. So here's your wage. Here's what I can afford to pay you based on my budget.
Yeah.
If you have the skills to pay the bills and you're fast and you care about the business to grow, guess what I want to do then? Yeah. If we had certain markers, certain KPIs, key performance indicators, and some OKRs, objectives and key results, I want to pay you a bonus. Which probably would be more than if you just settled for a salary. So true. I fire out that compensation model. And I find out what moves them. I find out what drives them. And my job is to help create opportunities. The people that are around me, if I can help you, I want you to be better after me than before you found me. That's my promise. So if people are associated with me, I've had people quit on me. I've had people I have had to fire. I've had people that have quit. You were with... You were with me when I had to fire somebody.
That was the most uncomfortable position I've ever
been in. But why do you think I brought you along for you to witness?
So I can learn how to fire people.
So you can learn how to, exactly. Exactly.
Fire the future girlfriends that I have.
Right. And because I know you and I, you and I are in service-based business, right? Yeah. And we generally look out for people. I'm a relationship person. You're a relationship person. We don't like when relationships go bad. Yeah. But for the benefit of the business, if you're not doing the job and I'm paying you and I'm not properly stewarding over the resources been given me to allow this low standard behavior to go on, and yet you're taking a paycheck from the company, you're a consumer.
Yeah.
You know, you're not a citizen that I'd want in my country, in my company, that's going to grow the country, that's going to grow the company. So that's how I look at it. And speaking of cost of building, I want to go on to this next topic. This home builder actually breaks down the cost in business of being a home builder. And what do you guys think? Do you think home builders, you think they get rich? You think they make a lot of money? They make a little money? Let's take a look at this video, what a home builder takes, what it takes for him to build a house.
All right, I'm going to do a little breakdown of what it costs us to build one of these Weston homes in Texas.
Oh,
property cost me $115,000. This concrete foundation cost me $31,000. The roof cost me $8,500. This framing package, including the siding and the cedar packages, $29,000. This landscaping and irrigation package cost me $12,000. Brick package and labor cost me $12,000. The custom paint job on this home cost me $15,000. These custom cabinets cost me $12,000. Electric labor and these badass light fixtures, $17,000. This nice cabinet throughout the whole house was $6,500. All the mirrors in the house and the glass around the master shower was $2,800. The tile package and carpet package, $17,000. Driveway, $13,000. All in all, this house cost my company about $430,000, and I've got it on the market for $540,000.
Woo!
And that's why we build homes.
So $540,000, right?
Yeah.
So
$540,000. $470,000, and then $540,000.
Yeah. So he's got about a 20% markup. So when you're looking at this, what's your initial thought?
I'm not at that point yet,
bro.
That's my first initial thought.
Yeah.
Mine.
So right. So there's business that you can start.
Yeah.
This is one of them.
Yeah.
You can be a home builder, but guess what's going through my mind?
Yeah.
How the hell you come up with $400,000 or $500,000 to sell one house?
Yeah.
So you have to have some form of line of credit. You got to have some form of a banking relationship, or you got to have some inherited wealth, or pull together some investors.
Deep topics, deep pockets as well. Yeah.
Correct. And then you got to split the 20% markup, and you might be left with single digits.
Yeah.
So my point in bringing this up is, if you're going to be in business, you got to know the costs for you to be in business. You got to know the And by the way, he's not going to make money until he sells the house.
Yeah.
And so with high interest rates right now, people not getting money to get off the sidelines, if going from renter to an owner, he might have to drop that price. And so, I've seen situations where people put all this money into the house, keep dropping the price, try to get some more showings. Mm-hmm. And then they sell it for next to nothing. You went through almost a year to build the house. Just in the next 30, 60 days to sell for next to nothing. It's sometimes it's a hard way to go about business, but it's definitely if you got enough, that's a business you got to go through volume to make some profit.
Yeah, because they're not the ones who are affected by the 6% rule, right? Those are real estate agents. These are just builders,
right? And by the way, what you're talking about is the National Association lawsuit a couple weeks ago that they decided to settle, right? Because it was a multi-billion-dollar fine.
Yeah.
So they settled for $300-400 million. But nonetheless, what's happening right now with the realtors is typically if I'm selling a house, there's 6% of commission divided between. Let's say if I'm a realtor and you bring me a buyer,
yeah.
Part of that 6%, let's say 3% is going to be yours.
Mm.
And then you got to split that with your broker.
Yeah.
Right? So so for me, if I'm the listing agent, I got to split with my broker, unless I'm the broker. Right? And you got to split with your broker, right? So there's 6% altogether. Now what they're saying is that 6% is too much. Or they're shrinking the pie together, saying, hey, listen, if you're going to bring me a buyer, the incentive for you to bring me a buyer is I'm splitting to you the commission.
Yeah.
Here's the problem, though. It says that the buyer is not got to be represented. You got to negotiate your compensation up front. So there's no more splitting of the commission.
Yeah.
So your client, a homeowner, like for example, myself, if I'm coming out the military, I'm making 30, 40, 50 grand a year, and I need to hire you as my realtor to go find me a house to use my VA loan, I got to pay you $2,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 because when the home is sold, you won't be paid. And so that's what's going on in the real estate world. They're shrinking down that pie.
But is it true that a lot of these people who have the houses on market, they're influencing the people who are selling to inflate the prices a little bit so they can get some money off of that?
And that's why it was done.
Yeah.
Because the theory was, or the argument was, hey man, you use realtors, you guys are in cahoots to want to drive up the cost of the home.
Yeah.
Because the higher the cost of the house, the more commission we make. Right. So here, when there's a high interest rate environment and homes aren't selling, guess what homeowners have to do? They got to drop the price. That's not good for me and you.
Yeah.
As a listing agent or as a buying agent. So that's what's going on, man. The next speaking of homes, here's part of the process of building a home, which is finding your spouse. And I don't know about you guys, but when I was younger and undisciplined and didn't really have the right values and principles and outlook on life, I was just dating, bro. Can I admit it? I was just dating, have sex. I'm saying what most guys think about dating process, dating to have sex. It wasn't dating to build a relationship, to build a home, to build a marriage. Let's take a look at what this guy's reaction when he was presented his girl. I think this is a show.
Yeah.
But this girl, she has a very interesting surprise for him. Very attractive lady, but she has a surprise for him. Let's take a look at this.
That's a girl. You got kids?
Of course.
How many you got? Why you huffing and puffing?
Because I got six.
God damn, to the left.
She's Puerto Rican. Sorry.
Why?
I mean, I ain't trying to deal with that shit.
Nigga, you ain't got to deal with that shit. I take care of mine.
You got to deal with that shit?
She's definitely Puerto Rican.
I take care of mine. You ain't got to take care of mine.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah, I'm still good.
So to the left?
Yeah.
Puerto Rican.
That's local. That's local.
That's local.
You're crazy. Tan loco.
I got that. Come on, get up out of here. Get up.
No,
come on, baby.
To the right. It ain't to the left. To the right. To the right. Baby.
She's forcing her way
security.
In.
Security. Yeah, get out of here. I don't heard about
that. She's being rejected.
They asked me crazy.
She feels rejected.
She's Puerto Rican.
She defaulted back to Spanish language. Okay, so... What's your thoughts on that, bro? Okay, you're dating a young lady, and she's attractive. You guys go on a date, and you find out she's got six kids. You're a single guy, no kids. You've never been married before.
Correct, dating. So I think maybe you can correct me on this. I think as the years go by, the idea of dating
has evolved.
What dating even means has evolved.
Sure, has evolved.
Right. So now I hear the word dating. I'm like, okay.
Instead of thinking of dating as a boy, you're now thinking of dating as a man.
Correct.
Right.
Exactly.
And more importantly, a God kind of man.
A God kind of man, right? And that's a whole different conversation within itself. But now, when I hear the word dating, I think I met you, we exchanged names, we had small talk, we exchanged information. A week later, hey, let's go get something to eat. And then we're still entertaining each other after a couple hangouts. To me, that's dating.
Yep.
I think a couple years ago, when someone said, hey, I'm dating somebody, you're exclusive, you're in a relationship, it's official.
Yep.
Right? So... if I'm dating, according to nowadays, and I go out with somebody, I want to know. I'm sorry, but I want to know on the first date, like, hey, do you have kids?
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you about your money, about your credit score, none of that crap.
Yep.
But do you have kids?
Yeah, I found out when I ran into Sheena. She told me within the first 5 minutes of our conversation, she's got a son.
Yeah.
And I told her in the first 5 minutes of our conversation, I have three kids.
Only because I don't want surprises.
Sure.
And, you know, to each their own, and for me being a single guy to this day, 32 years old, single guy, I know for myself, I've given it a shot in the past where in the last 5 years, I've dated a woman who has kids. And we've gone maybe on 2-3 dates. I'm like, okay, they're older. They're already like in 17, 116. So I'm not going to be as involved.
Yep.
And I need to understand the boundaries that I need to have as a single man with the woman and her children.
Yep.
But what a lot of guys don't understand is, you know, if you decide to walk into this, so for the men who are walking into it and they're with it, kudos.
Yep.
Right? I think if both parties have kids, it makes sense to have a blended family. But if you're a single man or a single woman and you're walking into a situation or a relationship and the partner has kids, some things that people don't think about are the heavy financial commitment that you need to have.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is like, all right, how involved am I supposed to be in this kid's life?
Yep.
And if you have six kids,
yeah,
you need to ask yourself, at least me, I ask myself, how many baby daddies?
That's exactly that at the top of the list.
The sexual responsibility.
Right, because how much of your past
yes.
do I got to deal with today in the present?
Exactly.
If I got to worry about some dude stalking me or trolling me on social media, whatever the case may be, that's not drama. And I can have it. I had kids. I was dating a woman that had kids and crazy baby daddies.
Right.
I said, I'm done. Forget about it. I don't want no extra drama in my life.
Right. So as a single guy, I was like, okay, sexual responsibility. Is she the one who's unstable, or is he the one who, or are these men unstable? Was she a hopeless romantic just looking for love? Mm-hmm. Or is she the one, or is she the reason why these men are pulling away from her and they just rather be a baby daddy than be yep. heavily involved in their life?
Yep.
And now if the man, me, yep. I want to have my own family, yep. does, you know, these kids, different behaviors, different attitudes, different approaches. So what kind of environment am I going to be walking into to a woman who has multiple kids? And that, for me, is what dictates, like, no, man, I'm sorry. Like,
yep.
first date, it's great, amazing. But the moment I find out you have kids, obviously, the older I get,
sure.
my mind starts shifting a little bit more towards, mm-hmm. like, okay, fine, maybe one kid.
Yep.
Okay, maybe two max.
Yep.
Same father.
Yep.
Not multiple fathers.
Right.
The older I get. But right now, I'm still in a position where I'm like, no, I still have options.
Yeah. With this situation, six kids?
Six kids.
And on top of that, if you have it in the way she was acting,
yeah.
if you have evidence that and she goes, I take care of mine. She goes, you ain't got to worry about that shit. I mean, that's the way you refer to your kids. You ain't got to worry about that shit.
Yeah.
It's a ghetto-ass response, right? So you ain't got to worry about that shit. I take care of mine. If you were taking care of yours, then why are you single now with six kids on a dating show looking at dates? You weren't taking care of yours.
There's a misfire. There's a
misconnection.
There's a misconnection there. Because also, when I first got to Dallas, I met someone.
Mm-hmm. What's his name?
His name? This is a transsexual person.
Be transparent.
Because this person had kids. I met someone, you know, cute girl. And, you know, we went on a couple of dates and, you know, come to find out she had two kids.
Yeah.
You know, a six-year-old and a eight-year-old.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I asked her, like, hey, man, so, you know, two different fathers. What happened? I'm just curious. I want to know. Am I dealing with the crazy person? Ha ha. Funny, right? And she's like, no. I ended up with the wrong, you know, my high school sweetheart. You know, we worked together for X amount of time. After that, you know, we broke up. He ended up marrying somebody else or whatever. And then, you know, I'm still a single mom and I meet someone and he gives me a very promising future.
Yep.
He cares for me. He loves me. He does all this. Yep. The moment we have a kid, he completely detaches from me, kind of leaves me alone.
Yep.
Right. So in those scenarios, like, who do you believe? What do you believe as a man? Do you believe that's true or do you believe she's a crazy one?
Yep. And only time will you find out. And hopefully it's not a time after you get her pregnant and think of like, you didn't find out and get her pregnant. And then you see, next thing you know, you're carrying that weight with you for the rest of your life. So, you know, if I was to summarize this, you know, if I'm talking to the 20, 30-year-old younger self, first question I ask myself is, how involved are the dads?
Yeah.
Not to say that a woman with kids or a man with kids is someone not to date. I mean, we're human beings and obviously you were attracted to that person because of the way they look and or the way they made you feel, et cetera. So number one, how involved is the exes in their present life? Number two, who's dividing up the financial responsibilities for the kids?
Yeah.
Right? What's expected of me if I'm coming to this thing and, you know, because as a man, I'm going to step in, I'm going to act as if these are my kids.
Yeah.
You know, because we're building a home together, not a divided house, a united house. The third thing I would, as going forward, is if conflicts arise, do you, as my girl with kids with different men, do you cry? You still cry on their shoulders?
Mm.
Do you still cry to the same network of friends that you're a part of, that you're friends with? Because you have to be divorced of that network.
Yeah.
Because now we're building a life together. So you're still talking to your baby daddy's sister.
Yeah.
You're still talking to the cousins of your sister that you built a relationship because there's time there that I don't know about.
Yeah.
So whose shoulder are you crying? And the last thing I would ask is where you at on faith? Because going forward, I need to understand the value system, how you look at life going forward after your hiccups in life. Because then conflict, and they will come to us and they will arise. How do you and I deal with conflict? Is based on I'm going to do me or I'm going to do God.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do God, I can rock with that. Because now we have a value system that we both agree on that's going to allow us to process a lot of these issues and look at our lives, our relationships, and what we go through for the lens of a value system that we both have as attached to. In terms of as a higher power. And so if you don't do that, this next video here, if you don't do that, cost of divorce, what's the whole saying? Cheaper to keep her?
Cheaper to keep her.
Is it really? Let's take a look at this video.
So how much did my divorce cost me? Well, this is a fantastic question. There's direct and there's indirect costs. Direct costs, I lost $106,000 out of my 401k retirement plan I spent 20 years contributing to. I also lost half the equity in the home, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, cash, and savings that I also spent 20 years contributing to. I also lost half of all the non-liquid assets like furniture, household goods, electronics, cars. Keep in mind, I paid for all of these.
Yep.
And this is in addition to financially supporting her and her slash our daughter for 17 years, which is many hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm now broke, live in a two-bedroom apartment, and have a negative net worth for the first time since I was, 25. Indirect costs, my job, my sobriety, my self-worth, my masculinity, my hope for the future, my ability to trust women again, my belief in God, my pride, my motivation, my physical health. I don't know. Let's just say everything.
The cost of a relationship. That's why it's such a hot topic, you know, and money, and then you add finance, and then you add faith to it, and then you add... You know, I'm in a personal finance space. I'm in insurance space. I can't tell you how many 50, 40, 50 year olds I will run across. And if things aren't right, if that's not based on the right value system, and then you're financially set back to like what he just said, I'm financially set back to 25 years old. And then on top of that, you don't feel so good about yourself as a 40 year old dude. Then you got to reinvent yourself. Now you got to recreate yourself. So that's why going into relationship, going forward, talk to my kids in my 20s, talking to our associates who are about to go in relationships. Take your time, man. Take your time. Find out what your value system is. And I pray and hope that it's based on a value system that's a power than yourself. It's got to be more than just do me, do you. I'm a do me. It's got to be more than just that. That's why I chose to follow faith. That's why it's called Faith Made Millionaire, not Matt Made Millionaire, or Wife Made Millionaire, or Team Made Millionaire, or Company Made Millionaire, or United States of America Made Millionaire. It's Faith Made Millionaire, because that is the foundation that I learned through a lot of heartache to build my financial future, my emotional future, my spiritual future on.
I actually...
You got a text?
From someone watching. It ties into the last video, and it ties into this too. And this person wrote, because they're watching now, but they didn't put it in the comments because I guess they're too embarrassed. But they said, speaking on the topic, you know, why don't you guys take more responsibility? Why are men more comfortable laying down with women, using contraception, and seemingly okay with bearing children, but fear of commitment, fear of marriage, or the intention of being financially and emotionally responsible for this child and their own personal actions?
I love this feedback. Thank you, whoever sent this to you. I love it. You're right. Men should take responsibility. I 100% agree. I learned to take responsibility. You know why? Because for the large part of my life, I say things like this. If only she did this. If only God did this. If only my mom and dad did this. If only my sister did this. If only somebody did this, I'd have a much better life. 100% agree. The moment you take 100% ownership over everything that you do right and everything that you do wrong, that's when your life starts to change.
And that's as a man.
And that's as a man.
Which falls down to the fatherless homes.
Let's take a look at this. Yeah. Here's the impact of fatherless homes. Is that a video? Let's take a look at this video.
Black people are only 13% of the population, yet they commit 55% of the murders. Why?
Because black people tend to be in lower economic statuses.
So you think that poverty equals crime?
It's highly correlated. A lot of
this is where we disagree. What an insult to the working poor of this country.
So why do you think black people commit more crime,
Charlie
Kirk?
Well, first of all, what percentage of blacks have a father around when they're raised?
I'm not sure.
25%. 75% of black youth are raised without a father in the home. 75%. It is the most predictable way to end up in prison, end up as a murderer or a criminal. It's not a racism problem. It's not a white supremacy problem. It's a fact that black fathers impregnate women and they don't stay around with the women that they have impregnated. Is that a bigger problem or not a bigger problem than whiteness, white privilege, or white supremacy?
How can you all be addressed and they're all related.
This is not about systemic racism. Like, stop impregnating your women and abandoning them?
Well, the way to incentivize not impregnating women and abandoning them is increasing access to healthcare, into housing.
So we have spent $30 trillion on the social welfare system since 1965. So the more money we've spent on black America, the less fathers we have, because black women divorced black men and married the government.
The government. By the way, I may disagree with a lot of things that Charlie Kirk had said right there. I mean, I interviewed the guy. I interviewed the guy, and I've interviewed him twice. And he'll say things that really will poke a lot of folks, and this is one of them. For me, being a single father, it's just a personal experience. I'm not talking about some survey or some poll or some research study. I'm talking about me. As soon as I walked into the court system, listen, guys, please don't judge me, but I'm just sharing with my example of what not to follow. I've got two baby mamas, okay? I've had three kids with two different women. And every time I walked into court, I was already blackballed that I'd be dead.
Because you had two baby mamas.
That's right.
Yeah.
All blackballed. And then come to realize that I had custody of them, that I was raising them. They're in my school system. They're in my residential custody. And so when you're looking at the policies that are written to incentivize women to divorce, and necessarily black men and pregnant women and leaving them, by the way, it's black, white, brown, everything. Men can do that. And that's why you get a text message the way you get.
Yeah.
Anybody can abandon somebody they get pregnant because they're scared, they don't want to step up to the responsibility, or they're not a man, they're a boy. By the way, ladies, if that's the situation you find yourself in, you hooked up with a boy. You didn't hook up with a man. Because a man takes responsibility of all of his actions. And by the way, I'm saying this from the guy that was a boy for many, many years of my life until I figured it out. I was in my 30s, 35, 38 years old before I figured this stuff out. And so when you're looking at the scenario of fatherless homes and situations like this, and by the way, I see that now as adults. We do workshops twice a week, financial workshops twice a week, multiple cities across the country. I can't tell you how many times you see people there that work hard, they're doing things, not financially set up, finances are a mess, they're set behind, no savings, no investments, high student loan debt, high credit card debt, high personal loan debt, mortgage debt, but nothing to show for, but everything to owe for. But this is the impact of what's going on. And that's why one of the greatest policies I'm looking to vote for this year is a policymaker, whether it be the red side or the blue side, whether it be Biden or Trump, is I want to make sure that whatever policies create allows me as a man to create economic empowerment to make sure I can make my bread. I can be a provider. I can be a protector. Because if I could do those two things, I feel great as a man. And my children are not dependent upon government. They're dependent upon me. And that's how I feel great as a man.
Comment. Okay, loading and uploading. So he just said, where's it? He just said that the only thing that defines a man is making money and providing. So if there's men out there who aren't doing that, but yet still be a nurturing father, but yet they're barely making ends meet, does that mean that they're not man enough to exist in this world?
You know, listen, the primary function of a man, sure, you can be nurturing,
yeah,
but you also got to be leading. You know, if you're trying to tell your kids to go out and live their dreams and you're not living yours, then you have no credibility. The kids aren't listening to you.
Yeah.
Your wife ain't listening to you. Your family members ain't listening to you. And you don't got to be a millionaire. It's great to make $100,000 or make $1 million. But if you're providing and if you're leading and not leaning, that's the intrinsic value of being a man. It's not to say that the car that you bring, the status you provide, but the fact that you can look at your kids, you look at yourself and say, listen, I'm doing right by my family. I'm providing. And that's how I felt when I was making 20, 30, 40 grand a year. I felt great now. And the reason why I started making $100,000 a year, making $1 million a year, because I realized I want to be in a position to improve the overall quality of life for my family. And I think as a man, we all want that for our family. I don't want to just settle. I want to expand. I want to grow. I want to provide an example for my children to be inspired by, to follow by. So, but no, it's not just being a provide and protect for men that defines men. There's a large part of it, though. A large part of a woman's job is also to nurture. A large part of a woman's job is to discern, to help her husband, and being, according to biblical principles, being a helpmate. Different roles, equal, different, but the man, at the end of the day, is the leader of the home. Everything rises and falls in leadership. That's why we look to men. That's why society today is over-mothered and under-fathered, and that's why we have the society we have today. And it's our job is through this podcast, our job through our work as entrepreneurs, our work through personal finance and coaching families is to help usher and lead and challenge and uplift and set the standard for men. I'd say that. By the way, I wish we had a capacity. Jordan, down the road, do we have the capacity to take calls? Maybe down the road we need to take calls. Not yet. Okay. Maybe we take calls. We just do it go ghetto style. We just put it on speakerphone.
And guys, if you guys are going to shoot me a comment or a message or a comment in my DMs, just put it in the chat. There's no shame to what you have to say.
Yeah, we're all learning from it.
Yeah, we engage from it.
And by the way, I'm not here of any standard saying that I'm perfect. I'm not perfect once. So I'm not the guy. I'm saying I'm the example to follow. All I'm saying is I'm just pursuing this as a way to improve myself. And many people out there don't have that basis. They don't know what to follow. They know what to see. They just kind of process it themselves. And they sit in their man cave and say, okay, I'm just going to do my very best. I'm just going to do me. No, I'm saying we are a format. We're a platform of two dudes behind a mic that have been there, done that. I've had my situation in the value that we create through our business, the value we create through our YouTube channel, the value we create through this. A lot of people are starting to pay attention. And we may not be your cup of tea. Oh, well, I totally get it. All I know, here's my prayer. I said, Lord, provide me the people that I'm meant to serve, but at the same time, to remove the people that I'm not. So if I rub you wrong, great, but maybe you stick around long enough, provide you all the stuff to troll me about and not like me about. But the other topic I want to talk about here too as well is speaking of money, is financial literacy. When we're going to wrap up with this.
Yes, sir.
We wrap up with another topic. Yeah. We'll see if we can squeeze it in. Financial literacy. April is financial literacy month. 57% of adults are financially literate. The U.S. ranking in the world, 14th in financial literacy. The amount of adults in America, 33% of adults worldwide are financially literate. That translates to an astonishing $3.5 billion adults who lack financial literacy across the globe. According to the T Institute, adults only answer 48% of 23 questions correctly in terms of financial literacy. This is a decrease from 50% in 2017. In other words, what I'm translating here in financial literacy month, maybe it's just not financial literacy month. Maybe it's financial literacy lifestyle. Because finance, career, faith, relationships is so important to not just dedicate 1 month to it, but also dedicating a whole lifestyle. Because oftentimes we ask people, how many times do you think about money on a daily basis? But I'm going to ask you guys on the podcast, live chat, how often do you think the typical person thinks about finances? Not often, often, or a lot often. I was thinking about money a lot and ask myself a question. If I'm working so hard, how come I have so little to show for? I have so much to owe for. What's your thoughts about financial literacy as it relates to America?
Going based off of your point right now on how much do you think about money? A couple years ago, I used to think about money as, along the lines of like, how can I stop losing money and how can I make more money?
Yeah.
And every single purchase that I made was a nickel and diming purchase. Yeah. Every single purchase that I made, I had a budget.
Yeah.
Every single purchase that I made, it was like, okay, I'm about to max out my credit card, but if I move this here, then move this here, if I close this, every single day, every single week, and every single month, it was either pay your bills or eat.
Yep.
And if you want to pay your bills, then you're having tuna and ramen for the next couple of days. Now I've, you know, by the grace of God, I've managed to get to a position where now whenever I swipe my debit card or my credit card, I don't have to think twice about it. And now the only thought that comes in my head is, how much more can I serve people to expand and make more money? But now, aside from that, how can I help people that work with me make money?
That's a power spot to be in.
Yeah.
That's a power spot to be in, because money shouldn't be causing you to create a lot of the missed decisions you have in your life. Because now lack of finance and lack of financial resource or lack of financial literacy is causing us to miss out on opportunities. 38% of adults lost $500 last year due to lack of financial literacy. 15% of adults lost over $10,000 last year due to financial literacy, right?
Yeah.
So that's a lot of people losing a lot. Imagine what another 10 grand would do for your savings invested, compounded 8% rate of return over 20, 30, 40 year period in a tax-free environment. So these are some of the things that we need to be thinking about to master and to talk about, because a lot of people on social media, they're rich.
Yeah.
Everybody on social media, they're everything's going great, but we know the real story.
Yeah.
There's a highlight reel that people put on social media, and then there's a real story that people have live behind closed doors that they don't want to share on social media. And so, which leads us into a lot of the health and wellness topics that you wanted to bring forth.
I actually wanted to lead off with for the last week, and then today they pressured me and like, man, please make sure to ask Matt. Please make sure to ask Matt. Is breaking this down that a fifth grader can understand it on what to trust.
Trust, okay.
Yeah,
do it.
All right, but Joy, if we can pull it up, it's what to trust. It's a legal document, and how does one do this?
Do not ever let your parents give you the house. Instead, do what the rich do. Son, I'm retiring and I'm giving you the house. Dad, you tripping. Don't put that in my name. What? Do you not want the house? Of course I do, but you've owned a property for a really long time and the property value has appreciated a lot. Which means if you was to transfer the property in my name today, I'll be responsible for paying all the capital gains taxes when I sell it. Man, it can't be that bad. So you got the property for $50,000 and now it appraised for $500,000. If you transfer the property in my name and I sold it today, I'll have to pay over $100,000 in capital gains taxes. That's a lot of money. So what should I do? Instead, you should put the property in the living trust and add me as the beneficiary. So when you are alive in 30 years, I can inherit the property tax-free through the stepped-up and cost basis. Okay, so how do I put my house in the living trust? First thing you do is get a copy of your current deed. Then you want to prepare a copy of a new deed. You can use a quick claim deed or a grant deed. On that form, the grantor will be your name and the grantee will be the living trust name. After you finish the entire form, you want to sign and date it in front of a notary. Then you want to take it to your local land record office and file it there. And once that's completed, your home will be in the trust. Got it.
This is legit. Zed, we're verified. When it comes to transferring assets to loved ones.
So their question was, what does Matt think? Does he agree? Does he disagree? Or how should we approach this if we're in that situation?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, by the way, the guy, Edward, he's an attorney, he's a CPA. He's taken a lot of my videos and done the same reaction.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I'm quote unquote, I guess, officially Edward verified.
Oh.
Yeah, from a lot of things that we do here on the show too as well. But you know, the thing is step up in basis. So for example, you bought a house, $100,000, and now it grows over time to $500,000. Mm-hmm. If that is an investment property, the $400,000 capital gain, if I didn't have something happened to me, I'd have to pay the capital gain of $400,000, right? But if I leave it in a trust and leave it to you as my beneficiary, right? Now it went very quickly. It's called cost of step up in basis. So the basis of the property when you eventually got it was $100,000. Mm-hmm. If you put it in a trust list this way and you leave it to a beneficiary, now you have the free step up in basis, which means now the basis of you owning it is not $100,000. The basis of you owning it is $500,000.
Yeah.
Right? So there's no gain to be taxed.
Yeah.
So that's how trusts and understanding the tax code can efficiently transfer wealth from one generation to another. That's why I got my property set up.
Really?
Yeah,
okay, for
sure. And it's funny because I'm getting on my way over here. I just got an EKG, my blood work for another life insurance policy because, you know, our net worth has gotten with this partnership with Integrity. Our net worth went like this, and so, and by the way, it's all net worth stock right now. It's not cash stock. It's net worth stock. So on paper, we're deca millionaires now. But just like a lot of people have their real estate net worth, or you know, there's one thing to be a cash millionaire, a cash flow millionaire. It's another thing to be a decamillion on paper. I can't wait to become a decamillionaire cash flow millionaire.
Yeah.
Because right now it's net worth. But nonetheless, you know, this is the progression. And this is from a kid from Morton West High School in Bruin, Siswestikon area in the Chicagoland area. Kid from Proviso West in the Bellwood.
Hillside area.
Bellwood Hillside area. We're from no-name neighborhoods, man. But through understanding money, understanding entrepreneurship, understanding our faith, a lot more your bandwidth is increased if you look at the world in a much different context. But in layman's terms, in terms of a trust, this is how you create tomorrow's old money. Like, you know what the topic old money is?
Yeah.
Well, what's your understanding about if I say I'm old money, or you walk to somebody, one of your friends or a business partner, and say, man, I come from old money. How do you define that? How do you internalize
money that's passed down, trust, bonds, all that?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. That's somebody 40, 50, 100 years ago made a decision to put the stuff inside trusts to protect it from taxation, to protect it from creditors, to protect it from people that want to sue you. So therefore, the beneficiaries, grandkids, great-grandkids, great-great-great-grandkids are blessed. And the way you protect all that is through trusts. Now, it's going to take some legal work. It's going to take some legal documentation. It's going to cause you to talk to a estate planning attorney. I like working together with estate planning attorney, not just your typical, you know, it's not your criminal attorney or your public defender. You want to talk to a attorney who specializes in estate law because the laws changes every year.
Yeah.
You're looking at unified, you know, gift exemptions. You're looking at the state tax credit is going up. And by the way, what do Michael Jackson, Aretha Franklin, James Brown, and Prince all have in common? They all died without life insurance, and they all died without a will and trust. Crazy, right?
And you would think that they knew about it because of the position they were in.
Right.
People in their network will tell them.
Paul Walker, Fast and Furious. Yeah. Died without a trust, died without life insurance. The irony is his baby mama, his daughter's Chloe, her mother, the woman he had a kid with, Chloe, had to sue her daughter after he died because she inherited it. They didn't get married. So therefore, the next of kin is not the girlfriend.
Yeah.
The next of kin is
daughter.
The daughter.
Yeah.
From a legal standpoint.
Yeah.
So she had to sue her daughter to get some assets, to get access to the assets that he left behind. And the irony, the worst part about this too as well in terms of Paul Walker's death is that he died with a passenger. So not only did it, you know, two guys die, but a guy in the passenger was a financial advisor. Irony.
Look at
so,
that.
So crazy things, right? So you think a lot of people know, they just don't have the conversation. So I hope you're having the right conversation yourself out there too as well. And if you're not having a conversation, stay posted to the Seven Figure Squad podcast or reach out to us. You can find me on Manect. There's an app called Manect. If you want to book some time, you want to say, Matt, I want to pick your brain. I want your insight on what we're actually doing here. And you actually want some FaceTime with me or want me to send you a text message and reply, go to this app called Manect or drop a comment below. And who knows, just like we did on the show today, we might use your comment as something we talk about here on the Seven Figure Squad podcast. We're figuring out too as well. And hopefully you're accessing platforms. They're not only giving you information, they're not only giving you education, but they're also giving you wisdom that you can use to put more money in your pocket and time on your side. With that being said, on behalf of Milton Alvarez from Dallas, Texas, I'm your Mighty Smart Guy. Make sure you subscribe, hit like. We'll see you next Wednesday. To meet again, continue to live smart, continue to love smart, and be mighty smart today. God bless you guys. Bye-bye.